New York-based jazz trombonist Conrad Herwig is considered one of the world's most complete jazz musicians, especially when you think about jazz education and performing together, both of those fields. He's performed and recorded with Miles Davis, Joe Henderson, Eddie Palmieri, Tito Puente, Frank Sinatra, Joe Lovano, Tom Harold, and many more. He's also performing with two of his students, and they join us now on the WBGO Journal along with Conrad. Conrad Herwig is the head of jazz at Rutgers University's Mason Gross School of the Arts, and two of his students joining us on the WBGO Journal is Grace Fox, who plays trumpet, and Evan Kilgore, who plays tenor sax. Great to see all three of you.
Thank you so much, Doug.
So let's start off with the jazz program really trying to do its best during a very unusual time period. The Mingus Ensemble is set to perform two concerts this semester, as is the Rutgers Jazz Ensemble, and all the concerts will be released on the Mason Gross Facebook page as a Facebook premiere, and as well as on the YouTube channel. They're set to release concerts October 28th with guest soloist Walter White, October 30th, and then again on November 30th and December 2nd. Conrad, that's a big adventure when it's all virtual, but you're probably getting quite used to this coronavirus pandemic and what you have to do as a musician and educator during these difficult times.
That's true. This kind of hit us, blindsided us in March, obviously blindsided the world this year. And what we sort of termed our instruction back in the spring of 2020 semester sort of as emergency remote learning. We were all scrambling to put something together. And I think we did a good job of doing that, you know, teaching classes like theory and improv and composition and arranging are maybe more amenable to virtual. And the problem was ensembles. How do you virtually rehearse and perform with large ensembles and small? Because actually, not only are we performing with the jazz ensemble and the Mingus ensemble, we're doing 14 concerts. We have 14 different jazz ensembles. So there'll be 14 different groups performing. And Grace and Evan can talk to you more about some of that. But what we did over the summer was try to really, and this is with the faculty, put our heads together for what we would call 21st century, just virtual learning. And part of that is putting these virtual concerts together. So we had a jazz technology camp in August, which what that did was to sort of get the, you know, it's sort of tech boot camp for jazz musicians. So we all got together with what we needed hardware wise, with our laptops, with internet connections and microphone technology, video technology. And then that's what we're doing. We're putting these concerts together virtually. And we have a system in place where we layer the recordings. And, you know, I think the first thing that I want to say is that jazz is an interactive art form, and this can never replace what we do in person. It's impossible. We all are desirous, you know, every night in the middle of the night we wake up just hoping that we can go to the jam session, go to the rehearsals, go back to the clubs that we love so much. I mean, we all grew up in a collaborative setting together. That's how we react and act, you know, and that's our life. It's a social art form. And the problem is we can't do it. I joke around, we're sort of alone together. Right? Yeah. You know, we're alone, but what we've done is try to put this technology together and this process. And I cannot give enough credit to our jazz faculty and especially our coordinator of jazz studies, Professor Mark Stasio. And as a family, we think of at Rutgers Jazz, we're a family. We pull together, we're all for each other. I feel young musicians like Grace and Evan are the future of this music, and that's what we're doing is we're going to find a way to have our voice be heard, our voices.
With people like grace and heaven being the future, that doesn't necessarily mean when you're an accomplished musician like Conrad Herwig is, who has played with so many greats and done so many wonderful recordings on his own, that doesn't mean that you want to have to help out other students, but you do. Why?
I think I hear myself, or I hear and really feel what they're going through, their process. And the other thing is, when I was younger, you know, not to name drop or anything, but when I was in school, their age, I was sitting in and performing with Red Garland. And then I met Clark Terry and went on the road. And then, you know, I mean, people like Buddy Rich, Toshiko Akiyoshi. I was in my late teens and early 20s. And I can just remember specifically back to Red Garland, for example, who always encouraged me. It was tough love, a little bit of tough love on the bandstand. And so I would give credit, 1,000% credit to Clark Terry, because Clark Terry was, in my mind, you know, the greatest human, one of the greatest human beings I've ever met in my life. And he always gave back, and he always said, you got to pay it forward. That this music is about growth, and it's about the young musicians. And he gave us so much love. And Clark made a joke. He goes, you know, whatever you do on the way up, that's how you're going to be experiencing it on the way down. So, you know, I want a soft landing. So I'm trying to, you know, just help these musicians out. And they are fantastic. There's no question. Their talent level. And it's a tough and frustrating time. So we're trying to aid and help them in their careers. And they're going to have fantastic careers. So that's what we're up, you know, that's what Rutgers is about.
So Conrad is paying it forward, Grace. What's it like to have this wonderful trombonist and educator as your teacher?
Yeah, it's heavy. He's great. Every Zoom call I've had with him, you know, he just shows how much he really, like, genuinely cares, you know, about our futures and our success. And, you know, he's just like this powerhouse of information, and, you know, he just has so much to give, and he's, you know, so willing to, you know, share his information with us. And he's also like a great guy, like a genuinely really, really great guy. So I'm, you know, everyone is very grateful for him, and yeah, it's a good hang.
Can't help notice that wonderful poster behind you there.
Yeah, it's Lee Morgan.
Obviously, can't go wrong.
Yeah. There you go. As a trumpeter, how difficult has it been working with the ensembles through this technology when it comes to everything, Grace? How hard has it been for the group?
Yeah. Well, this is my first year. I'm fresh out of high school. I've only played with like two members of both bands. So I haven't even seen, most players play their instruments. Like I've heard them, I haven't seen them. But it's challenging. Especially, if there's like a high or a loud excerpt that, you know, I have to play, you know, the sound quality will get distorted, you know, cause it's just a little microphone, and we call that clipping. So it's definitely a struggle, to record some of these parts, you know, having to figure out, okay, maybe I have to stand like a couple feet away from this microphone in order for it to sound good. So that's just another aspect, you know, that's thrown in that I'd never worry about, you know, that a year ago.
Grace Fox is a trumpeter there at the Mason Gross School of the Arts. Also joining us is Evan Kilgore, tenor saxophonist. And Evan, you were already giving me advice before we started this interview, because I told you I haven't picked up my saxophone since I started at WBGO 22 years ago and realized, oh, that's the way you're supposed to play it. Playing tenor sax with this group. First of all, why the tenor sax?
Well, first of all, Doug, it's never too late as a saxophonist, man. You can pick it up. But it is a very unique experience. And I also think, like, to talk about the education that we've received, like Conrad talked about the Jazz Tech Camp. That was so critical to our success because it got every single person on a similar page, like he was saying, hardware-wise. And so we all kind of know now how this system, this program that we're going to use, it's basically a cloud-based program, almost like Google Drive, right? But for musicians to input their separate parts. And so that whole system, getting used to that whole system, we got used to it August, first week of September, right? And then we're just hitting the ground running, basically. And just from there, we're just able to start, you know, tracking and putting out and completing these songs. So now we're at the point that next week, you know, we can release a whole 3-track album, you know. And then, you know, we have another concert in a month. So as a tenor saxophonist, really my role is to fit within the saxophone section, blend well, right? And then occasionally maybe throw down a solo or two, right? So it's definitely different than if we're in person. But I see it as an alternate skill set, basically. And that skill set, and Conrad's done a really good job of talking about the importance of this skill set, is something that all jazz musicians who are coming up absolutely need, which is the ability, like Grace was saying, mic technique. Right, the ability to be able to be very consistent and just like boom, be on the spot. You know, Conrad really harps on that a lot, and I think that's super important.
When Evan Kilgore gets an opportunity to do a sax solo, what goes through your mind? Do you picture yourself as one of the greats, or do you picture yourself as Evan, who's growing as an artist?
I think about honestly the composition basically, and I think about, in the composition, what is my role as a soloist? You know, sometimes your role is to kind of like shred, you know, kind of like be the guitarist in the rock band and kind of just like shred it, right? And have that role. Sometimes that's not your role, and it depends on the composition, right? So every single time I have a solo, or even if I don't have a solo and I'm just playing in the chart, I'm always thinking, what is my purpose here musically? And I'm always trying to fulfill that role.
We're joined by Conrad Herwig, who is the head of jazz at Rutgers University's Mason Gross School of the Arts, and two of his students, Evan Kilgore and Grace Fox. When you hear these two students, Conrad, talk, oh boy, we've heard for a long time, but man, they are an example. When you get involved in music, you can see just wonderful intellect in both of these students and the passion that Evan's expressing. It has to light you up every day.
Well, it's why I do what I do. It's why I'm committed to teaching and really we don't teach. What we do is we try to, you know, share our knowledge, and then it's sort of an unveiling process of the talent that they have. It's allowing them to realize their potential and their talent. Grace isn't just a trumpet player, she's our lead trumpet player, so she's, you know, the sort of the trend setter. She's the one setting, you know, the pace there. And Evan is our tenor sax soloist, primary, you know, in the jazz ensemble. And we're so proud of their talent. And it's exactly what we're trying to do. We're trying, and it is a trying, you know, I say try, it's what we're doing. This is a difficult time. But what we realize is that we have this story to tell. We have this cry inside of ourselves that has to come out. And so what we're gonna do is we're gonna find any way possible to get that message and that story. And yeah, it's that cry. I call it the minor cry. It's inside of us, and we're able to give that a life. And that's very satisfying and very gratifying to me with both of these students. And I'd like to just take this moment to mention that our concert next week on October 28th is honoring Professor William Fielder. And that was one of his terms, was gratified. He said, never be satisfied, you gotta be gratified. One of the greatest educators and human beings I've ever known. He was my colleague and mentor at Rutgers University. And his resume, you know, he's one of the probably unsung heroes of jazz, you know, his students. You know, when Prof left the planet, we had the first memorial concert. That was 12 years ago in 2009. And Wynton Marsalis came, John Faddis, Mulgrew Miller, Frank Lacey, you know, Kumba Frank Lacey, Terrell Stafford. And these were all his students. And he set the bar very high for us in this music. And so that's why we call it the Prof Fielder Memorial Concert every October.
Grace, most people would think it's easy once you have an instructor like Conrad Herwig or all the other people that he's mentioned that you may have had the opportunity at different times, like John Faddis, to meet. But when did the seed of jazz start in Grace?
I guess it would start for me in high school. I had a really great band director, Earl Phillips. He really kind of pushed jazz on us because he was just like a really cool person. He is a really cool person, you know, and he'd just be sitting in his office just like, you know, blaring Thad Jones. And, you know, I'd pop my head into the office and, you know, like, you know, what are you listening to? And I just like wanted to be like him. And then I started listening to jazz and I was like, well, yeah, I'm going to do this. You know, I like this.
Evan, if you could go back in time after learning all about these wonderful musicians, maybe a club, maybe a musician that you would go, boy, if I could be on stage with his or her with me right now, where would you like to go back to?
I mean, if there was one jazz musician, right? For me personally, it would definitely be John Coltrane. He's influenced me so much directly and even indirectly. If you talk about saxophonists like Pharoah Sanders or Michael Brecker or Chris Potter, those are all saxophonists. They're all in their own ways proteges of him. So between those four saxophonists, you know, there's so much information on how to express yourself, how to express the cry, right? And I feel like Coltrane was absolute a master of that. I probably just from being in the presence, just being able to play one tune with him, man, that would shape my whole trajectory, basically. So that would be one jazz musician.
I'm going to give you maybe your toughest assignment of the day, at least. I want you to tell our younger crew, your peers, why they should be listening to jazz and why they should be listening to the ensembles and listening to your solos and listening to John Coltrane. Tell us why.
Well, I actually have a great privilege of actually teaching a freshman class. I'm actually a graduate student. So I have a great opportunity, and Conrad gave me this opportunity, to teach this Survey of Jazz class, where basically I'm trying to give them a good scope of the jazz canon, basically, and talk about the beginnings to where we are now, basically. So I feel very strongly about this. I think it's very, very, very important for a musician who is like Grace's age to be aware of the entire history, right? From Louis all the way up to like Woody Herman or even like Walter White, right? The trumpet player that is our featured soloist on this first concert. I think that when you understand that whole heritage, that whole lineage, it informs your not only your playing, but also the way you perceive the music. I think that's so important. The way you feel it, the way you hear it, the way you feel that emotion. And I think that you can only get that, right, by checking out all those cats.
Speaking of emotion, Conrad, do you find that the students and yourself during this pandemic are more emotional than ever and maybe even more creative than ever? I remember when I had my conversation with Herb Alpert, he was stuck in his studio, you know, even at an older age, still making music, but, you know, being inspired by art, being inspired by various things. How about the pandemic? How has that changed your thought process when it comes to creativity and when it comes to putting together these concerts?
Well, I think musicians have a very interesting dilemma in one way, you call it a dilemma, but opportunity, is one that we spend a lot of time by ourselves as growing up as children, because we're practicing constantly. The musicians who are successful have obviously figured out a way to be by themselves and to apply themselves technically and creatively by yourself. And then the challenge comes that then we play with the group. So we're alone and then we're together in the group. I think and even within the context of a group, we are playing like in a big band, you figure out how to be a part of that group, a part of the fabric of the group, and then you have to stand up and take a solo, and then you're just out there. The pandemic has made us all sort of reflect and go back to the alone, what can I do by myself? You know, interestingly, a lot of us complain, is like, if I just had more time to practice, if I just had more time to be, you know, by myself, well, guess what? It got dumped on us because we're here. And so what it's done for me is I feel like I'm a teenager again. One thing, it's super helpful to be with young musicians all the time, but I myself have, you know, we have so much free time that it's been great to just practice my horn. You know, I can practice. I always said you can practice your horn, you know, an hour, three times a day, and then you can sit at the piano, and then I can listen to music on a deeper level because we have this time. So I think it's a challenge. And I think for older musicians like myself, you know, maybe it's actually a benefit to have all this alone time. Maybe for younger musicians, we could speak to Grace and Evan about, I don't think they want to be alone so much shedding. I mean, it's a great time to shed. And we have discussed this in our classes, that now is the time, as Bird used to say, that you can, you know, we talk about plowing the field and, you know, setting the stage, is that this time is going to influence the rest of their lives, because this will pass and we'll be back to some sense of collaboration, you know, in person. But I think it's an amazing opportunity for them. And I know I think Evan said I'm harping on them, but I guess I am harping in a way of just constantly reminding them that, you know, this is the time.
Anything you'd like to add about the concerts themselves that are coming up?
We're honoring Professor William Fielder, and we have to talk about Walter White, who's our guest artist with the Rutgers Jazz Ensemble. He's one of the great brass virtuosi on the planet. I mean, I always joke around, this guy's a freak of nature. I mean, he is a fantastic, instrumentalist, jazz soloist, a composer and arranger. On this particular concert, we're featuring, I think, the iconic composition, Love Progression, of Prof. William Fielder from his album. That was with Kenny Garrett and Mulgrew Miller and Ralph Peterson and David Eubanks. Our professor Mark Stacey has done an arrangement of Love Progression. Walter is doing some original music. We're doing an arrangement of mine. I think that's important to know, is just the virtuoso level. And, I think the amazing thing is how flexible and open the students were to accepting this technology, because it really is the world of the 21st century. I think, you know, moving forward, even when the pandemic becomes in the rearview mirror, this technology is going to open them up, because one thing that's happened is they're enabled now as recording artists, producers, audio engineers, video engineers, mix engineers. They have all these this incredible skill set. And so I think that is what's really notable.
Evan Kilgore, who plays tenor saxophone with the Rutgers University Mason Gross School of the Arts on different ensembles, you know, you're going through this and you have so many wonderful people who are working with you. Did that just raise the level of your ability? You know, you mentioned you're a grad student now. There's been pressure. I'm sure there was a point in your career at the school where you were nervous, and everybody gets a little nervous before they perform, no matter what they're doing. But the expectations have been so high. Does that just raise your game?
Yeah, it raises your game immensely, right? Because when you're in the presence of, you know, even, you know, these younger musicians, these undergraduate students, you know, that are like 7, 8, 9 years my junior, and I hear them, and they're killing it. They're sounding so great. And then also on the other side of things, you know, I'm like hearing like you know, my teacher Ralph Bowen like play in the lessons, and he's killing it. Just that presence of passion and work ethic is like infectious, right? So it just kind of propels you forward onto that next level.
I could listen to you talk a long time. I love your passion. Grace, I want to know, you know, we see more and more women in the jazz field breaking through. I'm sure you're glad that that's a part of it. But when somebody said, hey, you're going to be a trumpet player, and they looked at you, oh, you're a female trumpet player. You represent, you know, a growing part of jazz. Your thoughts?
Yes. I think this is such an important thing to talk about, because, you know, I'm in Evan's jazz survey class, and we're studying, you know, these really, really great musicians, but they're all male musicians. So I just think it's so important, for, you know, all educators out there to just promote, you know, that and at least show their students, you know, killing musicians like Ingrid Jensen, you know, like Tanya Darby. There's really, really killing female artists that are out there. And, yeah, I mean, it's definitely, it's definitely a challenge at times, you know, entering, you know, a school that, you know, even like I'm the only, you know, female in the jazz program, and that on its own is a little strange, you know, but fortunately, you know, this program is really, you know, there's no, you know, drama or anything, but. Yes, I think women in jazz is it's such an important, you know, thing that you know, not a lot of people are, you know, talk about, and I just think that if we are paying attention to these really, really killing, you know, young and you know, even past female musicians. You know, I think there would be less of kind of an issue, you know.
We look forward to Grace Fox on the stage, and we also look forward to Evan Kilgore as they play the trumpet and tenor sax respectively, all as part of the special ensembles that have been put together by Conrad Herwig, who is the head of jazz at Rutgers University's Mason Gross School of the Arts. Once again, there's a series of concerts that begin on the 28th, and run through December 2nd on various dates, facebook.com/Mason Gross School. And each concert will be available to view on the Facebook page at 7:30. And listeners can go to masongross.rutgers.edu/events to learn more about the series. It's been wonderful talking to all three of you. I'm excited about the concerts. I'm excited about the talent level that's going. I'm just excited to realize that, you know, this music is in great hands when it comes to Rutgers and when it comes to Conrad Herwig. Congratulations, and keep up the great work.
Thanks, Doug. And we really appreciate all that WBGO does for jazz around the world, but especially for us here in New Jersey. I mean, thank you so much.
Grace,
thanks so much, Doug.
Grace and Evan, thank you.
Thank you.
Take care now.